Hi, it's Brock Romack, editor of thecorporatecouncil.net. I'm here today with Jeff Kaplan doing his annual podcast with us. He's a founder and partner of Kaplan & Walker. And this year, Jeff's going to talk about the independence intersection of compliance officers and general counsels, a very interesting topic. And so there was a recent Wall Street Journal article, Jeff, and the issue of whether the compliance officer should report to the GC. It seems continues to be considerable focus both for regulators and for people and companies. Where do you come down on this?
Well, first of all, Brock, thanks again for inviting me back. I always appreciate the opportunity to take part in these podcasts. And on the topic, you're right, this is continues to be a hot topic. It has been for a while. And I think it's important at the beginning of a discussion of it to sort of set the table to identify two very different types of reporting. One is often called informational and the other administrative. And compliance officers should always have a reporting link, an informational reporting link to the CEO and board, and by board I mean whatever the committee, typically audit committee, is in charge of this stuff for a company, as well as to the GC. And that informational reporting itself has two components. One is reporting periodically on the overall operation of the compliance and ethics program, and the second, of course, is more or less real-time reporting when there's an allegation levied against a senior manager, which is or one that's SOX related or one that carries a risk of serious legal or reputational or other business harms to the company. But that's informational reporting, and so the trickier thing is administrative reporting. And here I think I'm maybe a little different than some people who provide the kind of services that I do, in that I tend not to think that there should always be administrative reporting to somebody other than general counsel. You do see that in the type of cases that are discussed in the journal article and have been discussed in a lot of articles, but those are typically cases where the company's had what could be called a compliance failure. And at the risk of using a medical analogy, which is often dangerous in legal discussions, you know, I think you could say what's essential to a patient who's had a heart attack is not necessarily indicated for one who's merely had some elevated cholesterol levels. So one shouldn't, I think, sort of assume that because the failure companies have had it, that everyone needs it. You know, some do. It's, not, I think, not an all or nothing, but those are often in companies, besides the ones that have had the failures, where the government has pushed this approach. And that's been particularly in industries where the GC herself can be viewed as a source of risk. So it's, I think, appropriate for some, but in my mind, not for all.
So in the reporting framework, is there sort of a middle ground somewhere between skipping the GC altogether and giving them unfettered discretion in supervising a compliance officer?
Yeah, no, I think there is, and it's one that I've promoted where appropriate to clients and other companies, and that's to have the principal administrative reporting to the GC, but also to stipulate in relevant governance documentation that neither the compliance officer's responsibilities nor her compensation can be reduced, and she can't be fired either, without the prior written approval of the audit committee. And again, by audit committee, I'm assuming that that's a committee for most companies that's oversees this stuff, though in some at the Nomination and Governance Committee. But this approach, which is not unique to me, you know, can seem like independence light, but I think for a lot of companies it's independence enough. And, you know, one thing I probably should have said in the prior comment was that it's not just that companies may not need the 100% independence approach. It could actually be worse for them, and I've seen this in some companies. If you have a general counsel who's really a champion of compliance and ethics, and I think, you know, 20 years ago there were fewer of those, but now it's not that uncommon, and who's also a powerful figure in the company, more powerful than the compliance officer could ever be on her own, taking the GC out of the reporting loop could weaken the program. And that's, again, why I think that this purist approach, you know, the sort of all-or-nothing approach to independence, is suboptimal for a lot of companies.
What about other areas where you think, you know, are there other areas where some companies might be going overboard?
Yeah, I do think there are. One is perhaps obviously training. And I should emphasize that there are more companies that do too little than that do too much, but there are some that do too much, subjecting employees to training that's makes no sense from a risk perspective. For example, and I've seen this in companies, training every single employee on antitrust, you know, it just doesn't make sense in a lot of companies, maybe in a few. And I think it's not just a matter of lost time, employee time, and lost money, but it can also reflect sort of the blunderbuss approach poorly on the compliance and ethics program as a whole. Sort of similarly, background checking, it's become a huge thing with FCPA enforcement ramping up in the last few years. And I just to, you know, put it in context, I would say there are more companies that need to do more than less, because it is essential. But there are, as with training, you do find companies that have sort of implemented background checking in a way that really seems kind of unhinged from any meaningful risk calculus. And again, it's wasted time, wasted money in some instances, and that can trigger a negative feeling towards the compliance program as a whole and weaken compliance in a company. And sort of the third, and it really relates to the first two, similar in sort of approach, technology. A lot of technology that various vendors have developed in the last few years. And, you know, I think on the whole, there's room for more technology in most companies and things like conflicts of interest management and, you know, number of other internal controls area. But then there's also, I think, the danger that people will buy technology, compliance technology, because it's cool and sort of fun almost, and introduces an element of fun in the program that otherwise might not be there. But that can be wasteful, too. So those are three offhand. There are others. And again, I'm not trying to get companies on the whole to do less, but I think sort of a more discerning approach than you sometimes see can help the dollars and the employee time go further than they currently do.
And what about the fact that compliance programs have been mainstream now for a while? Are people getting complacent? And do you have any recommendations to shake things up to keep a program fresh?
Yeah, it's sort of an interesting question. And you know, when all this stuff started, and I was involved in it since the late 1980s, I never thought we'd get to the point where there's so much and where programs do feel sort of middle-aged in a way. And again, you and I've you said at the beginning, we've been doing this for 10 years, which itself almost, I guess it's not quite middle-aged, but, you know, these things have now been around, at least in some companies, for a lot of time, and for that reason, refreshing is important, so people don't take them for granted and, as you described, get complacent. Certainly a risk assessment process, a vibrant one, is something that can be very helpful to show that risks, you know, the mission has not been accomplished, that there are still risks facing a company, and I just came out with an ebook on risk assessment, which is a link on my website. It's free. Second overall approach that I think can add life to programs that are starting to sort of weaken with time is a strong approach to incentives, to signal that to managers that attention to a program, that being ethically aware is still critical to the company and to one's progress in the organization, that it's a career plus. But that kind of attitude doesn't come by itself. The compliance officer has to work towards it. And then lastly, compliance programs assessments, which the Department of Justice and SEC do push, particularly independent ones, can be helpful in documenting the strengths of a program to show why they are important assets to a company, but also showing where there's still room for improvement, because given the nature of changing risks, compliance risks in particular, there's always a need to refine your approach. So those are three things, and again, there are others.
Great. Well, I appreciate your time as always, Jeff. This is really useful and practical, and you're the best. Thank you.
Okay, Brock. Well, thank you so much. I look forward to next year.
Thank you.